Again, this is Yori versus Helms. And good morning to everyone. We appreciate it if you keep your masks on when you are not presenting. When you do present, please take your mask off so we can all hear and understand what is going on. As you can see, we've got six members of the court here in the courtroom, and I won't introduce everybody. I'm Mike Havoc, and the Chief Justice. I will note that Justice Miller Lerman is participating by WebEx. And with that, either counsel have any questions? Thank you very much. We will proceed then. Mr. Barton, you may approach and you may proceed.
Good morning, Judge Miller Lerman here. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, I am Gregory Barton, appearing on behalf of the appellant, Mr. Kirk Helms. This case involves two successive appeals arising from the same contempt proceedings in the district court. These appeals raise what I believe are essentially two overarching issues for the court to resolve. One, are the provisions of the court's purge plan and subsequent amended purge plan punitive and therefore unlawful? And two, what is the scope of jurisdiction retained by the district court after appeal number one was perfected at the end of May of 2019? In the first appeal, we raised a number of challenges to provisions of the purge plan, which made significant modifications to the party's original parenting plan. In particular, one of the main challenges was to the modified transportation provisions, which gave Ms. Yori sole control over the transportation of the party's son, Lucas, to and from athletic events and other activities.
Was that designed to address the very thing, the very problem that brought the parties before the court on the contempt proceeding?
Well, there was, as I recall, over 100 specifications made by Ms. Yori in the district court before I got involved.
So was that designed to address one of those issues?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so there's a connection there.
Yes, sir. Thank
you.
But it went further than that as well, because Lucas plays basketball and he goes to out of state and out of town tournaments that encompass whole weekends. When these weekends occur on Mr. Helms' parenting time, Ms. Yori is still given sole control over Lucas for that entire weekend. If the purpose of the modification of the parenting or the transportation provision is, as Judge Colburn said it was, to make sure that Lucas attended his athletic and other events, that purpose is served and satisfied by permitting Ms. Yori to transport Lucas to the event.
Was there ever a concern of the child not coming back from a break in the event? If it was an event that lasted throughout the day and there were multiple sessions, multiple games, were there concerns that...
No, Your Honor, that never happened. but he loses the whole weekend at that point. And then there's certainly no reason to say after the event is completely over, well, Mr. Helms can't even drive Lucas home during his parenting time. Those provisions are punitive. They don't serve any remedial purpose.
Are you contending that those provisions were intended to punish Mr. Helms for his past conduct, or were they intended to prevent recurrence in the future?
I think they were intended to punish, Judge, because if the recurrence problem is he's not getting to his events, that's fully solved and remedied by allowing Ms. Yorey to drive Lucas to all these events. There's no problem with getting him home. There's no problem with allowing him to go out and have dinner with his dad on a Saturday during an all-weekend out-of-state basketball game. But Mr. Helms is completely deprived of his parenting time.
Was any suggestion made to the trial court as to how the conditions might be modified to eliminate what you are now claiming are the objectionable aspects?
These transportation provisions, Judge, originally arose as part of a temporary order entered in December of 2018. I filed a motion for clarification with Judge Colburn, which was heard in February of 2019. And the colloquy at that hearing is quoted in detail in our brief of appellant and appeal number one. And what Judge Colburn said was, my concern was that Lucas make it to all his activities. It was never my intention to interfere with Mr. Helms' parenting time other than for the transportation to the events.
I'm not sure that this recitation answers my question about whether the trial judge was alerted that there was an alternative to what the trial judge had imposed. Was the trial judge alerted of an alternative?
Well, not on the record, because at the end of the proceedings, Judge Colburn has counsel go back in chambers and talk about it off the record.
So it's not in our record.
There's no record of that.
Right.
That was a final order at that point, once it was entered on May 1. And so that's why we appealed. Because whatever input we had, we got no input in the final version of the order of contempt.
Are you suggesting you had input off the record?
Yes, Your Honor.
Did you make some demand that this needed to be on the record?
No, Your Honor.
Is that your responsibility?
I'm sorry?
Is that your responsibility to get the record that you want?
I would say it is, Judge.
Perhaps as the time dwindles, you may want to address the jurisdictional question regarding the second appeal.
Well, we would concede that under 42-351 subsection 2, the district court surely has the authority to enforce the prior order while the appeal is pending. The district court does not have jurisdiction, however, to start modifying provisions that already modified the parenting plan, which are being subject to challenge in the first appeal. And that's what happened in this case. The district court also entered, as part of its amended purge plan, the district court reached out and slashed Mr. Helms' parenting time from a 7-on-7-off schedule to a 10-4 schedule.
What did the trial court say was the intended length of that modification?
The trial court didn't say there was an intended length. What the trial court actually said was, we'll schedule this 4.5 months down the road for a review hearing, and maybe I'll restore the 7-on-7, or maybe I won't.
Does that make that a temporary order?
I don't believe it does, Judge. It's possibly subject to future modification. What the trial court did not say was, we come back in 4.5 months, Mr. Helms, you demonstrate that you're in compliance with all the purge plan's terms and I'll restore the 7-7. He didn't say that. He said, come back and we'll take another look at it and see what I'm gonna do further. And in our judgment, that's no different than the entry of a standard final parenting time order, which, as we know, is subject to future revision in a modification.
But those aren't set for a further hearing or review, are they?
But the end result is the same, Your Honor.
When we entered a decree, a parenting plan, as a trial court, there's not a set date for a review of that. Is that correct?
Correct, Judge.
There has to be a material change of circumstance to warrant a modification of that.
Well, what the court actually said in the order said, you've got to come in, Mr. Helms, with proof that it's in Lucas's best interest to go back to the 7-7. So he's not saying show me full compliance. He's saying go beyond that and show me what you'd have to show in a modification case anyway.
Counsel, what was the shelf life of the original order, order of contempt? How long was your client required to comply?
3 years.
Thank you.
And so when the court amended the order in various particulars, that 3 years kept running, Your Honor. And it's still running right now. And when since he's down to a 10-4, if there's a weekend basketball tournament, he gets one night with his son because of the way the transportation provisions read. I see I'm out of time. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much. Ms. Martinez, good morning to you.
Morning. Let me just get a drink of water quickly. Thank you. Thank you. May it please the court. Counsel, good morning. My name is Amy Martinez, and I am here to represent, Connie Yori. As noted, there are two separate appeals before you today. The first is the appeal from the contempt finding from May 1 of 2019, and then the subsequent order of contempt filed August 2, 2019. This argument is a long time coming, Your Honors. This case actually began on Labor Day weekend of 2015 when we were forced to get an ex parte order requiring Mr. Helms, who at that time was a raging undiagnosed alcoholic who had absconded with the minor child. That was the start of the case that Judge Colburn began. And Judge Colburn remained our judge throughout these proceedings. So he's well aware of Mr. Helms's conduct throughout the pendency of these proceedings. And I think that's important to note when the court is considering the reasonableness of his modification of the orders that were intended to coerce compliance by Mr. Helms.
Let's talk about the distinction on some of these provisions. When they are remedial, are they actually sanctioned at all?
It's a good question, Your Honor, and I sort of parsed that out a little bit last night to see if I could maybe make a distinction for you that perhaps that is the clearest way to address that. And honestly, I could not do that with the case law. Perhaps it is there, but it does seem to me that some of these I don't think any of the provisions were punitive. I think that Judge Colburn has been far more liberal with Mr. Helms than we wanted him to be.
Well, the 30-day jail sentence would be punitive.
It was intended to coerce.
Or coercive, right?
Right? It was coercive. It was 21 days, and he was allowed the opportunity. He knew it was coming. The judge told him it was going to come. He came back, I think, the next day. He was put in jail that day. He paid whatever he had to pay, which I think were nominal amounts, and the court allowed him then to proceed with his parenting time. But I think it's worth noting, Your Honors, that at the time the contempt order was filed, it said that upon the verified affidavit of Ms. Yori, that Mr. Helms would be jailed. We filed that. And I don't do that lightly. We did it with 10 different allegations where he continued to violate the court order over a 60-day period. We filed that, I think, in July. When we filed that, it was my concern that the court would do what the order said, which was put him in jail. And I was concerned about that. And instead, the court, I think, and I respect the judge very much for doing this. He said, I'm going to set up for hearing. I'm going to give him a chance to come in and explain what happened. And he yet again afforded Mr. Helms another opportunity to please come in and do what you're supposed to be doing. So I think that speaks to the fact that these were intended to be remedial and not punitive. If the court wanted to be punitive, it certainly could have issued a warrant for him at that time, and it chose not to. Does that speak to your question? Thank you. With regard to this divorce agreement, it was filed. It was very contentious. It was filed in March, actually in February of 2017, the decree of 2017. About 6 months later, Ms. Yorey had enough, and she filed a contempt action. So that was done in October of 2017. You'll notice that these contempt orders are from 2019. It took us that long to get to the point where Mr. Helms was finally held accountable for something. It's exhausting. It doesn't work. Even while the contempt action was pending, he continued to violate things continuously, thumbing his nose at the court, thumbing his nose at Ms. Yorey all along. And so there was argument in the brief that, geez, all you had to do was, you didn't have to modify the parenting time provisions. You didn't have to change the transportation. All you had to do was threaten that he was going to go to jail. Tell him to do it. Well, it's clearly not enough. We've already been doing that, and it's not enough. So I think that also speaks to the notion that these were intended to be remedial, because he was consistently and continuously and deliberately violating the court's order. In the end, and this is the longest contempt action I've ever filed, I had 65 alleged violations. And there was no way I was going to make it through a trial of a day or two on that many violations. So we went with a few. And the court found that he had violated everything that we had alleged. And the court said, look, I think the judge actually said something to this effect. This is serious. If you do this again, I'm going to start reducing your parenting time. Not kidding. And what does he do? He goes and violates it again. And so when we come back for the hearing that I didn't really think was necessary, but I'm glad that we had, and they just said, all right, I'm going to put you in jail, and now I am going to reduce your parenting time. So I told you I was going to do it, thumbed your nose at me, and now I'm going to do it. So we reduced his parenting time. And it was actually my suggestion to do it on a temporary basis, because I didn't permanently want him to modify this parenting time. I wanted him, as Ms. Yorey did, to comply with the order. Do what you're supposed to do so that your son can have 7 days of parenting time with you and 7 days of parenting time with his mom. And it can be successful, because that's what we're supposed to be doing, right? We're supposed to make this good for this little guy who by now is this tall and is 16. And instead of doing that, he violated it again. So when we come back before the review hearing, we couldn't have the review hearing because now we have both of these appeals. But I do think that that was a temporary order, speaking to what Justice Funk asked about. I do think it is, I think it does affect a substantial right, but I think it's a temporary order. And so, I'm sorry, it's a special proceeding, so not a substantial right. And as such, I think we should have had that hearing, and then I think it would have been a final order to appeal. With regard to the contempt findings, I do see that each of the very detailed provisions of that order address an issue that had been raised. I can't remember which of the justices asked about the child going to an event but then not being brought back. I think it was Justice Funk. Did he go to an event and not get brought back to a second game? Yes. Were there times where he went to weightlifting and his dad came to pick him up early so he didn't get to go through the whole thing? Was there evidence of that? Yes. So it was necessary to have the transportation to. It was necessary to have the transportation from. I can tell you that when we crafted this order, there was time where we were back with Judge Colburn trying to make sure that we had the precise language. And it's not on the record, but what the judge said and what I was trying to do as I drafted this, and it was approved by the court, was to write it in crayon so it was so clear for Mr. Helms that there was no mystery. This was not a try to set him up so he would fail. This was a set him up so he knows exactly what he's supposed to do, what he's not supposed to do. And that's what the order does. So it is the most detailed, frankly, the most detailed purge order parenting plan that I think I've ever done. And I give the judge credit because, as I said, he said, come back in 4 months and show me you're complying and you get your parenting time back.
What if at that hearing in 4 months, the judge had said, I see some improvement, come back in 3 months. And then in another 3 months, I mean, how do we rein that in? And at what point one of those orders become final and appealable?
I don't know is a short answer, I guess, from a speculation standpoint. I guess what a party could ask for Just to say, I don't want a chance to come back in 4 months. Just tell me what it is and make it. May I please? Oh, I think I have to mess up. May I, may I just come back? Just enter the order. Don't need a review hearing. I'm going to address it. I'm going to take it up so that it is clear. Because honestly, I think when the judge does set that for a review hearing, particularly for 4 months later, it wasn't like a 3-year review. 4 months later, it was really an opportunity rather than a way for him to abuse the system and try to keep it. So it didn't come up to someone else to address. So I think I've spoken kind of, I'm out of order on my arguments, but I think as to the issue of whether we should be here on the second order of contempt, which is kind of the follow-up, I do think that this court lacks jurisdiction at this time. When we went to the review hearing, we each, counsel and I each briefed for the court whether we could proceed at that time, and we both concluded that we could not because the matter was here. But I would ask that the court dismiss that second appeal and let us go back and address that issue. With regard to the first set of modifications and then ultimately the second set of modifications, I do think that there is a nexus between each of the modifications and one of the violations. There was, I think, some argument about the athletic expenses, that there wasn't a violation that or a due date for the extracurricular expenses. I think what the judge was doing was to try to bring everybody current, right? Because we've got now this case that's been pending for 2 years. And the goal was to get everybody current, square up what you owe. You don't owe the mileage. You do owe this, pay this amount of money and get everybody a fresh starting point, because this case just kept kind of piling on. So I do, I would ask that the court affirm Judge Colburn's decision with regard to the first appeal and respectfully request that you dismiss the second appeal. Unless there are any other questions?
I do have a question, if I may. If the second appeal were dismissed, how does that impact, if at all, the appealability of the first case?
Good question, and I apologize, Justice. I should have been addressing you as part of this. I wasn't turning my body. I'm not certain where your camera is.
I'm good. I've got you on a screen. So not okay. A problem. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't think it affects the appealability of the first portion of things. I think that appeal is proper. I think it's important for the court to review that and to address that. Does that speak to your question?
Yep, it's kind of woven together, but perhaps it should not have been. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Any other questions? Very good.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal?
No.
There is no time for rebuttal. We will go on then to the next case today. Please exit, counsel, and anyone else who might be leaving, please exit through this side door, yes. And thank you all very much for abiding by our coronavirus procedures.